joining We the People Radio for the second hour. You can reach us by phone at 530-605-4567. And online, we've logged into the chat room, so there is a point of going to the website. It's wethepeopleradio.us, and there are some folks in the chat room now. We kind of forgot about it last hour. We were busy talking medical talk, and that's always confusing.
I got all wrapped up.
I know. Got all focused. And don't make me hurt you. It's going to cost extra.
Sorry.
We don't have concierge medicine.
I won't mention that movie.
On the page, I linked all the stuff for the doctor, too, and the archive will be up by about 2:30 of both shows. So if you guys missed part of it, you should go back. It was very interesting. I have one announcement. I don't know if I have all the facts straight because I wasn't able to listen to the voicemail. But Tracy Mann, who has been on here with us several times, she's just been doing a ton of research on Common Core. She will be speaking at the Reading Tea Party tomorrow night, Monday night, the 16th at 6 p.m. And my voicemail translates into text, and what it says is there's childcare if people bring their kids. So they're looking for parents to come and learn, and if you can't go because you have kids, I guess you can take them. And they've got it figured out. Somebody will watch them. So there you go. That's all my hot information for the afternoon. I've now expended everything. And we've got Art Thompson. So now let's get to business. We've got Art Thompson on here again from the John Birch Society, and we had such a great time with him last time. But we didn't get to the Constitutional Convention, and there's a lot of talk about that these days. So we thought we better get the real lowdown on what's going on with this thing, and Art was just the guy to do it. How you doing, Art?
I'm doing very well. Thanks.
Are you on the, since the country is virtually sawed in half, and the right side is freezing cold, and the left side thinks it's summer, are you in summer or are you in winter?
Well, I'm looking for Obama's global warming right now. We can't have it. We don't have any here.
You're in the not global warming area.
Yes, very much
yeah,
so.
We have a heavy dose of global warming today.
We are having all the global warming. Well, my daughter lives in Maine. She sent me a text last week. They had 87 inches of snow, so.
Yeah, they have no global warming.
They have no global warming in Maine.
No, they, one of the, in fact, the president of the John Birch Society has 7 feet in his front yard.
Oh.
And he just lives outside of Boston.
Oh,
so it's
gosh.
The same with us. We don't have much here. We maybe have 6-8 inches, perhaps, but high today of 8. I woke up at minus 8, so it gives you an idea.
Yeah, we left our coats at home because it was 70 when we left.
73.
I feel 73. So sorry for you.
Yeah.
That's kind of weird. I miss winter. I know. It's a good thing you're not here. You whacked me in the head.
We don't get winters anymore. I don't understand that.
I miss winter. Our trees miss winter, too. They're all blooming, so there's probably some frost coming that's going to screw them up. So, anyway.
More likely.
So, the Constitutional Convention, at the end of the day, is a bad thing.
Yes, we think so very much, and for a number of different reasons. First of all, we ask the primary question, if Congress, the President, or the Supreme Court follows the Constitution today. I've never had anybody say yes. Well, if they don't follow it today, what makes us think they're going to follow something that would be amended for the better? And, you know, the three branches follow the Constitution, would not follow the Constitution any more faithfully than they do now. The problem isn't really the Constitution. It's that they don't follow it. And there are a number of proposals, by the way, in relationship to this Constitutional Convention that disturb us a lot. It's being sold amongst the conservatives with a number of various issues, such as a balanced budget, abortion, that sort of thing, and they've gotten a lot of Republicans on board. But what they don't realize is there are a lot of Democrats, liberals, and socialists on board this thing as well. That is sort of behind the scenes. We know that there are individuals who want to completely rewrite the Constitution. We know that there is a heavy move to change the Second Amendment to the Constitution through this process. Some of the leaders of this process actually are very much involved in trying to eliminate the Second Amendment as we understand it today. In other words, the right to keep and bear arms. They want to change it to the right to keep and bear arms within a militia. Well, since no militia really exists, no one will have that right.
Yeah, no kidding. This is,
pardon?
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, that's a disaster.
It is. And what a lot of people don't realize as well is that the umbrella group, Call a Convention, is actually run by an anti-Christian individual, Lawrence Lessig. Now, he may say he's not anti-Christian, but I don't know of many Christians who show videos of Jesus Christ lip-singing I Shall Survive, then taking all of his clothes off down to a diaper, running down the street, getting run over by a city bus. He stopped using that video anymore because it caused such a negative reaction to some of the audience.
What a surprise.
As you can well imagine.
Yeah, no kidding. And he's the guy kind of behind this?
Well,
or
he's
one of the guys?
He's one of the guys. In fact, he attended, for those of your listeners who understand the Bilderbergers.
Yep.
Last year, he attended the Bilderberger meeting. And he is the man who is running the umbrella group called Call a Convention. That includes these liberals, socialists, and conservatives who all agree that they need a constitutional convention. Now, they may not call it that, although the original conference at Harvard University last year, or maybe it was the year before last, excuse me, called it a constitutional convention. Now suddenly they're calling it a conference of the states. COS is the term they use. But they all agreed that they wanted to use Article 5 for a constitutional convention. They all agreed that they were going to move this agenda forward, even though they disagreed, at least publicly, on the agenda. So we see, for instance, in Oklahoma, they have not been doing very well there in getting this passed, so now they've included the idea of a pro-life amendment as part of the process. And we've told people all along that, look, they're telling you that all they want is a balanced budget amendment. Now they're throwing in pro-life and on and on and on and on. You cannot limit what is done at these conventions. In fact, there are four states, and if I remember correctly off the top of my head, they include Arkansas, South Carolina, Indiana, and Hawaii have put in a blanket call for a constitutional convention with no instructions whatsoever. Just go have a convention and discuss the Constitution.
Wow.
Yeah. So this is the kind of thing that we see growing. They've thrown millions of dollars into it, from which we cannot find the source. We have no idea where this money is coming from. Last year they bragged they were going to spend $29 million on it. I know that they've been having charter jets and a lot of other people getting frequent flyer miles going around all over the country, sitting down and talking to legislators. Well, they have to do it that way because they don't live there. They're from outside the state coming in and convincing these people, whereas members of the John Birch Society are getting in front of their representatives in those legislatures to convince them that this is not a real good deal. It's too open-ended. It's fraught with danger. Even Madison said, I fear for the day when we have another constitutional convention. Another thing is that if you don't, just ask yourself the question, if you're for it. Let's say, you know, it sounds like a great idea. We have to do something is the mantra.
Yeah.
And so who is going to be or how many people are going to be representatives from your state to this convention? How are they going to be elected or appointed or whatever? We simply don't know at this juncture. If you don't know who are the individuals that are going to represent you at a constitutional convention, I'd be a little worried because they don't have the name of Washington and Madison and Hamilton and Jay and those kinds of people. Instead, we have individuals that even the best of Republicans that are familiar names in various households around the country are not exactly constitutionalists as we think of original intent. Oh, they may talk about the Constitution and everything else, but when you look at their voting record, only a few, a handful, rise to the level of voting a constitutional agenda 100%. Very, very few of them even rise above 60% on the Republican side of the ledger. So if you don't even know how your delegates are going to be named, who they will be, I'd be a little concerned about that. So there are other aspects of it, too, but those are the essential things that bother us.
Yeah, no kidding. So when we come back, we need to delve into why it is that you have guys like Mark Levin and all those folks that are kind of, you know, they appear to be flame-throwing right-wingers.
Well, they're beating the drum for this whole thing.
But they're beating the drum for this. So let's do that when we come back. Take a really quick break and thank our advertisers. You are listening to We the People Radio. Catch us online, wethepeopleradio.us. We're here with Art Thompson, CEO of the John Birch Society. We'll be right back with you here at KCNR, 1460 AM.
Well, you filled up my head with so many lies. You twisted my heart till something snapped inside. I'd like to give it one more try, but my give a damn's busted.
The mission.
This New Year's Eve was the final barrier.
The mission.
We took you up and we put you in the backseat.
Submission.
From year to year, we looked up for the venture.
Dominance.
Submission.
That makes the Constitutional Convention sound scarier, actually. You are listening to We the People Radio. We're here with the CEO of the John Birch Society, Art Thompson. He's actually Arthur R. Thompson, but we get to call him Art, which is pretty darn fun.
Prefer it anyway.
Yeah. So tell us why. Why are guys that are, you know, should be on the right side of all this, why are they pushing it?
Well, I think the answer, and I know this is going to sound strange when you're talking about individuals such as Mark Levin, but it's primarily a blind spot, if you will. They don't take a lot of things into consideration when they make their decisions. We in the John Birch Society take a look at a broad spectrum when we make up our decisions on something. So when you go, for instance, and I hope your listeners have got a pad and pencil, or if they still exist, a pad and pen, so that they can jot these things down and look them up for themselves online. And if you go to, again, callaconvention.org, and it's very difficult to get into it, but once you get to there, they will tell you who are involved with them as their allies, if you will, their advisors and so on and so forth. Originally, it said that this was a coalition of these individuals on their website. Once we exposed who all those individuals were and started to circulate that information, suddenly it went from being a coalition to simply people who agree with each other. And on this list are some very interesting people, because you should look up a guy by the name of Sanford, S-A-N-F-O-R-D, Levinson, L-E-V-I-N-S-O-N, and he's a constitutional law professor. Spent a little time online looking at what he has advocated in the way of changing the Constitution. He wants to rewrite the entire Constitution, period. Wolfpack, W-O-L-F, the animal, P-A-C, Wolfpack. The man that really started that got his start with Soros money.
Yeah.
So you have those sorts of people in this list, along with the Goldwater Institute, Mark Levin, and others. And they all agree they want to use Article 5, but I wonder sometimes if these people think that they're going to be able to control this. By that, I mean the people that follow the Goldwater Institute and Levin, not understanding what can happen with a lot of money and a lot of media, and the media is not exactly conservative, getting behind this thing once it's started to snowball. and they can take it over and misuse it. There are no rules. If you take a look at the original Constitutional Convention, if you remember your history, that was called to change, or amend, rather, the Articles of Confederation. It was not called to completely give us a different document nor change our system of government. But they sat down and decided it's just easier to start over, and so they did that. Wonderful men that were there, they gave us a great document, and so on and so forth. But one of the things that they wanted to change of the original articles was term limits, for instance. And yet today, one of the things they want to do with this Article 5 today is to reestablish it. They found out that term limits don't work. Let me give you one example. Has term limits for the President of the United States given us better presidents? No.
Yeah, no.
And so the thing is that people don't understand the nature of term limits as to how it can be used, because once you have term limits, you have a perpetual lame duck Congress. Nobody thinks about that part of it, to where that lame duck Congress can do just about anything they want simply because they will never, ever again stand for election. You see?
Sure.
And that was one of the problems under the Articles of Confederation. Bribery was a big problem. So at any rate, that's neither here nor there. But we believe that some of these people in good faith think that they're going to run this convention. But you've got states like New York and California, forgive me, but you have a real problem there.
Yeah, I was going to say, talk about term limits that have failed, huh?
Yeah, and so there are states like that that are very liberal. They're not going to be standing aside in this convention process. They want to control it. How do we know what the actual ratification process is going to be? Mark Levin, for instance, in his book, advocates that we lower the requirements for ratification for a constitutional amendment. Originally, under the Articles of Confederation, it was unanimous. In other words, all the states of the United States had to vote unanimously to make any amendments to the Articles of Confederation. The convention said, no, we'll lower that to 3/4. Now, Levin in his book says, let's lower it to 2/3. Well, 2/3, I'm sorry, you can get an unbalanced budget passed through Congress anytime you want with 2/3, because that has been the historical amount of vote enabling them to pass unbalanced budgets. They always get over 60% voting for it. So that gives you an idea of, well, it on the surface may appear to be, you know, a good thing, but it's lowering again the standard of what we want to ratify amendments. Now, let me go back to the Second Amendment. I can prove to anybody in a you know, if I'm in front of them, because I have to have the proof in hand to show them, that since the 1970s, in the public schools, people have been convinced that, yes, the citizen has the right to keep and bear arms, but Congress has the right to regulate them. Now, I've got that right out of school texts. And also, in the Common Core curricula, this is also something that they're trying to convince people of, that the Second Amendment is, oh, yeah, you can own a gun, but Congress has the right to regulate it, and any number of things. Now, if you figure it out, from 1970s on, the American public school system has been training people to believe that it's okay for Congress to regulate firearms. Now, what happens if they change that little subtle thing in there from the right to keep and bear arms to right to keep and bear arms in a militia? The people would fall for it, and that's dangerous. So that's the kind of thing that we're saying. Even in the ratification process, it depends on the education of the American people to understand the original intent and the reasons behind these things and the principles on which the Constitution was based. We don't have that today. And that is really the crux of the problem, is that the American people, if they don't force their congressmen to adhere to the Constitution now, no new constitution is going to work either. And the problem is, therefore, the problem is more long range. The Tea Parties, the John Birch Society, Eagle Forum, which, by the way, is also against the CONCON, we all have to work together to educate as many people in an outreach program on the Constitution. Now, one of our people say, oh, that's impossible. And yet, one of our adjuncts, one of our affiliates is Freedom Project Education. We have gotten, which is a school online, virtual classroom. In other words, it's homeschooling, but you're actually in class on your computer by Skype. And one of the things that we've done is put out constitutional videos. Do you know that we've had over 8 million people see those videos in the last 2 years? Yeah, it's a big task, but it is not an impossible task. And more people are waking up to the fact that they have to understand the Constitution. And there are so many things. I get up to the Hill, once a quarter, and I sit down with some of these congressmen. Some of them are just superior. I mean, there are men in Congress and women in Congress that are really good. You've never heard of them. They're never allowed to be chairman of committees. I know of one man who's been a congressman for 28 years. He's never been allowed to be a chairman of a committee because he's a strict constitutionalist. The Republican leadership will not allow him to do it any more than they did with Ron Paul. But you get in there and you talk to some of their staff and everything else, and you just sit there with your mouth open as to how ignorant some of them are about constitutional principles. They do not understand them. It is incredible. So it is a matter of educating people, even the congressmen. And sometimes the best way to educate a congressman is through the constituents, because they won't vote for a man that doesn't vote the right way and hold the position of the founders of our country. And that's changing around more and more in the country as we can educate more people. We don't have to tell them how to vote. They just simply evaluate that candidate based on his knowledge or her knowledge of the Constitution and their willingness to live up to it. If they did that, we wouldn't need a constitutional convention, and we would have a balanced budget. Although, and this is a key point, and this is something that your listeners should write down, we need to repeal amendments to the Constitution rather than add amendments to the Constitution in order to have a balanced budget. If we get rid of the 16th and 17th amendments to the Constitution, we will have a balanced budget ultimately. Pure and simple.
Well, how did those amendments get ratified to begin with? I mean, they must have had the approval of the people.
Well, they did. And I'll tell you, it all came about as a result of the elections of 1912. In 1912, the Socialist Party candidate, Eugene V. Debs, got the equivalent today of over 3 million votes. You also had the Progressive Party that got several millions of votes. And you also had Wilson, who got several millions of votes and became president. Those were all primarily socialist in nature. And they did not understand, and there was a lot of agitation, a lot of media, a lot of money went into the idea that we need to have direct election of senators. The people have to vote for the Senate instead of the legislatures voting for the Senate. Let me tell you how it worked. The government's budget was based on tariffs and luxury taxes, that kind of thing, and excise taxes. And if the budget went over what they took in through those means, then they dunned the states for that, to make up the budget fall. That was done based on the population in those states. In other words, New York, you have this many people. Arkansas, you have that many people. Wyoming, you have that many people. Based on your population percentage-wise, that's what you owe us in money. Okay?
Oh, okay.
Now, that meant that when the House voted for spending, which all spending bills have to start there, the senators didn't want to vote for a budget that would dun their legislature, because they would have to go back and answer to the legislature, and the next time around they'd be voted out. You see?
Right, right.
And so that was the first step. The second step was the income tax. Now, there's a very interesting, and I don't have a constitution in front of me right now, but there was a very interesting word in that amendment that established the income tax, and that word allowed the federal government to dun the American people for these budgets instead of dunning the state legislatures. Okay? So those two amendments to the Constitution changed the entire process of how national budgets were met. And because nobody talks about this, that they're talking about a constitutional convention. I mean, they're moot. They don't even want to go there. And if they understood that it's just a matter of repealing instead of adding, it would be much more simple to get a balanced budget. There's something else in the works, because too many people are working together for a wide variety of amendments. And you have to ask the question, why? Why don't they talk about these things?
Yeah, why don't they? I mean, and now I'm sorry, were you talking 16 or 17?
Both.
I have my, okay, so 16 is short. Congress shall have power to lay and collect taxes on incomes from whatever source derived without apportionment among the several states.
Without apportionment amongst the several states.
And without regard to any census or enumeration. And that's the end.
That's right. That was how they did it before. They did it through apportionment through the states. That's how they raised the money, from the legislatures. See, it's very simple if you understand what it's saying.
Sure.
But most people, because they don't understand how it was done before, do not understand the verbiage. But that's what it's all about.
Interesting.
So it's very interesting. And like I say, you've got to take a look at the whole spectrum of how we got ourselves in this mess in order to know how to undo it. I mean, we don't undo it by adding more to it. We have to go back to what our founders wanted originally. You can't find your way home if you don't know where you started from.
True.
And a lot of people don't look at these things and try and figure out, what does that mean?
Well, it's no different than, you know, a lot of these legislatures, you know, pound their chest because they got new laws on the books. Well, we don't need more laws. We need to follow the laws that are already there, because we already have laws that protect us and do what they're supposed to do. We just don't follow them, and we don't enforce them.
But people are funny. I had somebody tell me last week, well, Congress isn't doing its job. They've hardly passed any laws. And it's like, you know, actually, you might want to rethink that. That's kind of a good thing.
Yeah, I vote for the guy that says, I'm gonna repeal laws. That's going to be my goal.
Stuff.
Yeah.
Well, I put a thing on the chat room, Art, back when we were talking about the lack of I don't know if it's schooling or knowledge or what, but there's a guy named Mark Dice, and he periodically goes out among the citizenry and does these nutty surveys, and he tapes them, puts them on YouTube. And he had one where he was walking around with a clipboard and asking people to sign to repeal the First Amendment. And people actually signed it.
Well, bro.
They were like, yeah, that sounds like a great idea. It's like, what? So obviously they had no idea what the First Amendment really
and
was.
And the scary thing is these are the people that we run out and we register to vote, you know, because we want their vote.
They don't
know what they're voting for.
Okay, so before we bash the public, because God knows we all make mistakes, but wow, you know, should check with your family and friends, make sure they're not some of those folks. We're going to take one more quick break, and then we'll have Art through the top of the hour. And no more interruptions there. So you're listening to KCNR 1460 AM, Shasta Redding. You're on We the People Radio. Find us online, wethepeopleradio.us. And the phone number is 530-605-4567. Be right back.
I'll keep my freedom. I'll keep my guns. Try to keep my money and my religion too. Try to keep on working, try to keep on smiling. I will keep my Christian name, and y'all can keep the change. They all started
looking real suspicious at him, and he jumped up and said, "Now just wait a minute, Jim, you know he's lying. I've been living here all of my life. I'm a faithful follower of Brother John Birch, and I belong to the Antioch Baptist Church, and I ain't even got a garage. You can call home and ask my wife." Then he started saying something about the way I was dressed, but I didn't run around to hear the rest. I was too busy moving.
Best
and
song ever. Thanks, Bob. Oh, my gosh. Had to get that in there. Wouldn't be right without it.
You know, one of the things I'd like to recommend is that your listeners go to thenewamerican.com, and at the top, you'll see at the top bar, it says Voting Index, and it's the Freedom Index, and they can look up every member of Congress as to their cumulative voting record vis-a-vis the Constitution of the United States. The best guy you have in California in that regard is Tom McClintock. He has voted a cumulative record of 91%. All the rest of them are below that. And you might ask the question, how long, you know, even when you've got good men and women, they're 80%ers, let's say, how long does that 20% accumulative erode the Constitution?
Yeah, you know,
when they
no
vote,
kidding.
You know, so that's part of the problem. One of the men that used to be in Congress said, "I read every bill, and I start with the title, and if it's unconstitutional, I say no." He says, "Sometimes it's the title. Sometimes it's the first sentence." He says, "It's always within the first three paragraphs." So that's the way they can. It doesn't take long to go through these bills that way, if you have a constitutional sense.
Sure. And it all depends on who's scoring.
Well, that's true, too.
It all depends on who's scoring and what their agenda is, because one that just stuck out for me was a 2013 bill by Justin Amash. Don't remember the number, but it was going to limit the NSA's ability to spy on people without a warrant. It was a mm-hmm. pretty, it was a pretty short bill, too. And it was mm-hmm. basically going to curtail them. They couldn't spy on people without warrants. Seemed like a good idea. Heritage judged that bill as zero conservative.
Really?
Yeah, you got a zero for that one if you voted for it. Like, okay, that's confusing.
Well,
there is some of that kind of nonsense going on.
There is, and regrettably, most of the conservative organizations inside the Beltway tend to be neocon, and rather than constitutional. We had a very conservative movement, a constitutionalist movement, in evolving out of the 30s into the 60s, but then it got co-opted by the neocons after the 64 election. I saw things happen in the, see, I was on the Draft Goldwater Committee back in 64. As just a local, you know, young buck working for the Draft Goldwater Committee. Not much of a leader, but a heck of an activist. And I'd go all the meetings and everything else, and I started to notice strange things. For instance, men that I never heard of before who were suddenly the leaders in the Goldwater movement, who after the election exposed themselves as being very, very liberal. But they came into the movement, got a surfboard, and got on the wave. And so then they rode that wave into leadership in the party under false pretenses. And it was very difficult to get people to understand this after a while because they didn't have the experience over a number of years. I used to go to all the Republican conventions and work on platform committees for the state and all the rest of it. And I learned there were some people that had a tremendous conservative reputation, but in reality, they were anything but. They were not for the Constitution. They were not pro-life. They were not for the Second Amendment. They always, for instance, let me give you an example of how this worked. I said, one guy, I was on a speaking tour talking about taxation, And this fellow that was putting it on in this area of Iowa had to go home and get something before we went down to the venue. And we rolled into his yard, and he had this sign for president. And I won't even mention who it is. I said, I thought you were Catholic. Because he says, I am. I says, well, then you're strong pro-life as a result of that. He says, yes, I am. I says, well, why are you supporting that man for president? He said, well, he's pro-life.
Mm-hmm.
I says, where do you hear that? He says, well, it's in his literature. I says, give me a piece of his literature where it says that. And he gave me the man's campaign literature, and it said, family values.
Oh.
I said, sir, family values is what you think they are when you read this, not what he really believes in. And that's the kind of thing that they use, these somatical weapons against us, to where they get us to think they stand for one thing, when in fact they don't at all. Anyway, it's a problem, has been a problem in the Republican Party forever. And
well, that sort of thing is easy to identify once they're in office just by their voting record. But how do you protect yourself from somebody who, like you say, is going to jump on the wave and get elected for the first time? I mean, you still have to take a chance if that person is telling you the truth going into going into office.
So it really boils down to having a network in your area to find out what this person is really like,
sure,
through your friends that you trust. I'm sure that you go to Tea Party meetings, for instance, other things such as that, and the word kind of gets around as to what this person really stands for after a while.
Sure.
And that's how you do it, basically. It's the only way you can do it, really.
Right.
And it isn't 100% perfect, but it's a way.
No, and it's funny, too, because sometimes, people get so, we get lied to all the time, Brian Williams notwithstanding, and boy, haven't we had some fun at his expense. But,
yeah.
You assume that everybody's lying, and the bad part is then, even when you're told the truth, it's easy to rope people in because they figure they're being lied to. And that's another, form of it, like this constitutional convention. They figure, well, a lot of these people are probably lying to me, so I'm going to believe guys like Mark Levin, and, he wouldn't lie to me.
Well, that's true. The thing is that sometimes when you tell the truth, and you tell it unvarnished, people can't accept it. See, in the John Birch Society, we believe in a conspiracy. We say there are those who mean to rule us.
Mm-hmm.
People think up ideas, people organize ideas, people finance ideas, people make things happen. And as FDR was purported to have said, nothing happens in politics that wasn't planned that way. And yet when you show people who the planners are, sometimes they aren't ready to accept it because you're stepping on the toes of their heroes. We get our heroes through the media, primarily. That's how we're fed our heroes, whether we realize it or not. And as a result, people don't like that. And once people make up their mind about something, it's 10 times harder to get them to change their minds. And the conservatives have heroes just as much as liberals have heroes. And sometimes these people have been put in those positions in order to fool us. I know, for instance, let me just give you one crazy off-the-wall thing. Many years ago, I used to infiltrate Marxist organizations, and I did so in tandem with the Seattle Police Intelligence Squad. In other words, we worked together. I was not part of the squad. We just worked together and, ferreting out information. In those days, in the early 60s, late 60s, we used to have bombings all the time. People today have no idea what terrorism was in the United States in those years. It was quite prominent. At any rate, that aside, the leading terrorist in the city of Seattle, and J. Edgar Hoover called him the most dangerous terrorist in the United States, was a member of the Students for a Democratic Society. He was the leader of it. And a few years ago, we got a phone call at the John Birch Society from an individual who was a religious man. And he said, you know, we agree on certain things, and we disagree on certain things, but I would like to write for your magazine on those things we agree with. And so the IT guys and the magazine came to me and asked, do you know this fellow? And I said, no, I never heard of him, Reverend so-and-so, but I have heard of so-and-so. So we went on online, and sure as shooting, it was the same guy.
Wow.
Now posing as a man of the cloth. And with the same political background, except now he'd put on a disguise. And I started to do some research, and it was amazing how many terrorists of the 1960s and 70s had become ministers, rabbis, and imams in the Muslim faith. You remember Stokely Carmichael, Burn, Baby Burn? He became an imam, and a lot of others like that. In other words, whatever it took to be able to assimilate into the general society and start to promote their philosophy from a position of respect rather than a position of burn, baby, burn. And so this happens a lot within the conservative movement, and people don't realize how much this happens and how some of these leaders are actually have been on the other side all along. They changed their rhetoric and are now Mr. Conservative instead of Mr. Terrorist or Mr. Liberal or Mr. Socialist or whatever it is. You have to be very careful about such individuals. You never are sure whether they changed or whether it's a facade.
Well, I think if they changed, if they truly changed, they wouldn't hide their past. They'd admit their past and admit their new enlightenment and let it go from there and see if people believe them or not.
And there are men who like that. Who've done that.
And that's fine. But you can't reinvent yourself and try to keep your past a secret.
Not in today's world.
No.
Well, how much of that is going on with this convention? Because I see things, you know, I was just kind of clicking around on some of these sites and, oh, the John Birch Society is misleading and lying to you. You know, they're putting out bad information, saying it's a scam. And, you know, how much of that is actually taking hold?
I don't know for sure. I know that it has some effect, but let me tell you that I kind of have to chuckle when I see that they have constitutional scholars and we have fearmongers.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the way it's sold. That this is all fearmongering. It has no basis in fact. Don't pay any attention to them. Don't look behind the curtain.
Yeah, it's very Oz, isn't it? Yeah, don't look at the man behind the curtain.
So that's a lot of that's going on, and they've been able to get some rhinos involved. What's his name? Lasik? What's the governor of Ohio? I can never pronounce his name.
Kasich. John Kasich.
Kasich. Yeah, they got a charter airplane for him, and they took him around to North and South Dakota and Montana and Idaho and Utah to meet with legislators to promote this thing. And if you look at his background, he's got a conservative image, but if you look at the issues that he's been involved in, it is anything but conservative. For instance, he was one of those that supported the assault gun ban, for instance. So there we're back to the Second Amendment again. And you see that sort of thing always cropping into some of these individuals. They spent a lot of money putting him around, and they got him in front of an awful lot of legislators, and I'm sure he convinced many of them that they need to vote for a constitutional convention, because we've got to do something.
Yeah, anything.
Anything.
You know, that's where I think people really get hooked on these things, is like anything's better than what we have now, and that is so dangerous.
Yeah, and anything isn't.
No.
We're in a mess. There's only one way out of the mess. It involves work. A lot of people don't like that. It's the worst four-letter word in the English language. But it basically is, you've got to get involved in an outreach program educating the opinion molders in your community. That is not an overwhelming problem. Only 5% of the people, 5% run your local community. They're the individuals who are Boy Scout leaders, they're Kiwanian members, they're in the Chamber of Commerce, they're on your city council, etc. If you can get to those individuals, you will change your community. If you can educate them as to the problems and their solutions, things will change. And these things are going on around the country in pockets here and there where we're able to do that. But it takes outreach. It also means informing your family and friends and peers at work and that sort of thing. But primarily the focus has to be on the opinion molders. Once you do that, things start to change. That's what happened during the War of Independence. Everybody agrees that the population was divided into three parts. One third wanted independence, one third wanted to be Tories, and one third could care less. Mm-hmm. But the historians say that 3%, only 3% got involved in the war. Well, that 3% was the majority of that 5%. In other words, 60% of that 5%. And that's what won the war. The average citizen wasn't ever involved. It was just those people that ran the local communities.
Well, it's the same in California. I mean, when you look at your California elections, I think it was like 17 or 20% of the people are the ones pushing through and you know, implementing all this garbage we have here.
I've actually seen local elections where 4% have made the difference.
Isn't that crazy?
I mean, they've actually been the majority.
Yep.
Unbelievable. So, just say no to the Constitutional Convention. And if you want more information, you have
JBS.org.
Yep.
Go to JBS.org.
Got tons of it on there. Art, we appreciate you coming on with us and smartening us up.
Okay. My pleasure.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Enjoy your 8 degrees. We're going to go prance outside with no coats on.
Sure.
Thank you very much, Art.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks a lot. Next week, we're going to come back with William Kay and Environmentalism is Fascism. You're going to love it. Get on there and find out what we're doing with Technocracy Rising as well. WeThePeopleRadio.us.
On KCNR Shasta.